RT have announced that Airtel will close next week. It's been in service for three decades. It's been running since 1986. It will be switched off on Thursday, the 12th of October. And they're to a person. Journalists are crying about it on social media. They're like, oh, it's the end of an era. I don't get it. I didn't really use it that much. Some say they practice the news reading and all that kind of stuff on it. So Airtel's going. Are you upset? Did it mean anything to you? Is it the end of an era? I mean, it's not going. There's no chance of retaining it. But when was the last time you pressed the text button on your TV to check stuff out? Are you sad that Airtel is gone or going on the 12th? As I say, an awful lot of digital tears on social media from particularly the journalistic fraternity. But as I say, I can't even feign that because it's not something I really used that much. I remember Channel 4 text used to have quizzes on it. And I used to go on and try and do the quiz in the Channel 4 text every day. And then some days someone didn't bother updating it and I was all disappointed and stuff. But anyway, do you miss or will you miss Teletext, RT's Teletext service? Can I play a couple of requests, please? I want to say hello to John Porter. He's in Buncrana and he's 82 tomorrow. Happy birthday tomorrow, John. That comes in from Jimmy. Johnny Bell from Bella Buffet celebrates his 21st birthday today. Happy birthday, Johnny, from Martin, Maeve and your two brothers. Hope you have a lovely day. 21. It's not. Do people still do 21st birthday parties and stuff now? I don't know. It's that long since. But one coming up next year, actually, maybe. I don't know. We'll see. Can you give a big happy birthday to Bran Sauce? That's her nickname from everyone. On the Maggins bus, she's heading to Westport at the weekend. Have a good one. Don't even want to know where the Bran Sauce... the Bran Sauce nickname came from. Oops, my apologies. I have Roisin holding on line one. Roisin, apologies. I didn't know you were there. Good morning. I did know you were there, but I forgot. Good morning, Roisin.
Hi, Greg. How are you?
Good, good, good. Right. Now, you contacted us off the back of news reports of an increase in Strep A over the course of the last year. And, you know, figures published of the amount of people that were affected by this. You had invasive Strep A earlier this year, did you?
I did, yes. Back in March.
Right.
Yeah.
And what was your experience?
Strep A. I was very sick. I got sepsis and pneumonia with it. So I was really sick with it. Now I was in ICU for a while and I was in hospital for 16 days in total. And I had to have two operations to clear the infection.
Wow, really? Okay. And how did it come on? How long were you sort of off form before it was clear, Roisin, that something else was going on?
It came on quite quickly. I actually had a baby, a baby girl, fourth baby, and she was born on the 8th of March. And I just went downhill after that. And on the 13th of March, I was admitted then into hospital. So she was only 5 days old when I went into hospital. So I was in ICU. I went straight into ICU.
And when people hear sepsis and people hear pneumonia, I mean, those two things are serious on their own. But to have both of them at the same time, you must have been really sick, Roisin.
I was pretty sick. Yes, yes. Because I went to the GP that day and my blood pressure was basically non-existent. And my temperature and blood pressure was through the roof. So, they rang an ambulance and said I had to go straight in.
Oh, my word. And you, as you say, just 5 days after having a baby as well. So your body's still in recovery mode from that as much as everything else, Roisin.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. The way the consultant described it, he says, once you have a baby, when you have a baby, your body shuts down for a few days. So I would have had the Strep A before the baby was born, but I didn't realize. My body would have been fighting it off, but then once my body shut down, the virus just took hold and took over my body, and that's when sepsis and pneumonia then crept in as well.
And you said you had to have two operations to remove the sepsis. Is that unusual or usual, or is it an extreme case, Roisin?
I'm not sure actually. When they took me into theatre for the first time, they didn't actually know it was Strep A at that stage. Mm-hmm. Because when I went into hospital, they knew I had sepsis and pneumonia, and they knew I had an infection in the stomach, but they didn't know what it was causing it or yeah. where it came from. So they were giving me all different types of antibiotics, and I was just getting worse. And my temperature, couldn't get my temperature down. So that was on the Monday. And then on the Thursday, they made the decision to take me into theatre because they basically couldn't get the temperature under control. And it was the next day, the Friday, that they discovered I had strep A. They were growing growth. They had two examples when I went into hospital. Mm-hmm. So they were growing growth cultures. And it was only when they came back on the Friday that they saw that it was strep A.
And what were
They were able to give me.
Sorry, Roshi, what were your family being told? Were they being told how sick were they told you were?
They knew it was serious. You know, the consultant was very open with us. And he was, you know, I have to praise the hospital staff. They were absolutely fantastic. The consultant did say to my husband that they were very, very concerned for me.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, yeah. And they were, you know, they were, like I literally had teams of doctors around my bed every day. They were, you know, they were doing everything they could, really, to find out what it was and what was causing it. And they actually, because I just had a baby, they actually gave me a private room up in maternity and just had a nurse stationed with me 24/7 so that my husband was able to bring the baby into me then every day. Because otherwise, if I was in ICU, the baby wouldn't have been able to come in.
No, and I think as part of your recovery and sort of keeping your spirits up in a tough time, you would need to have seen your family. There's no doubt about that. And how long after that then did you start showing signs of improvement that you were sort of over the worst of it, Roisin?
Well, after the first operation, once they realised that it was strep A and they were able to give me the correct antibiotics and correct medication then, within the next few days, I started feeling, but I still would have been on a lot of medication from the operation, recovering from it, you know. So everything would have been still very blurry until I eased off on the medication. So it was probably a good week in 10 days in the hospital before, I'd say a good 10 days before I started to feel back to my normal self again.
Right. And all good since, and baby and family are good now?
Yes. No, back to full health again now. And it took a few months once I got out of hospital to get back. I was still very, very weak after I got out of hospital.
Yeah.
And so we actually had loads of help and support from family and friends, and we wouldn't have been able to, you know, to cope otherwise, really.
Well, we're going to be doing a feature on this program in the not-too-distant future, Unsung Heroes, where, you know, we interview people who may not ordinarily be interviewed on radio and talk about their lives and achievements. Let's talk about your husband here, because he's the real hero.
You know what? He absolutely, yeah.
We don't get enough credit, Roisin.
He was really, really thrown in the deep end of it now, because I actually was breastfeeding the baby up until I went into hospital.
Yeah.
And so he had to, the maternity actually gave us a few bottles of formula then to keep us going, because my body was so sick I wasn't able to make any milk at all myself. But he was really, he had to learn. We never bottle fed at all any of the other babies, so he had to learn how to bottle feed. He had to go and buy all the bottles and formula and up during the night feeds and everything. He would never have done all that before, obviously, because I was breastfeeding. So
worried sick about you too, jokes aside. We're getting a two for one here, because of course it is Breastfeeding Awareness Week. You were breastfeeding, as you mentioned, up until you got sick, and then obviously your sickness interfered with your ability to produce milk, but you were able to pick it up again there afterwards once you returned home, Roisin.
I did, yes. I hired a hospital grade pump. And just expressed every few hours and got my supply back again and got back exclusively breastfeeding then within a few weeks of being home.
Wow, okay, so that's real determination.
So it can be just a shout out to it. And do you know what? It can be done. If anybody has to stop breastfeeding for whatever reason, mm-hmm. you know, they can get back to it if they feel the need to. They definitely can do that. Yeah.
So just to be clear, what we're talking about there is your body stopping supplying because they think you either don't need it or you're not doing it, and then you have to re-encourage your body to start producing milk again. Have I picked that up correctly, Roisin? And you can do that. Is that what you're saying? Okay, perfect. Okay.
Exactly. Yeah.
So as I say, you know, We read earlier on about how bad strep A can be, and I think maybe an awful lot of people might associate it with younger people, you know, kids and all, which are vulnerable and can be exposed to it. But it's a reminder to all of us to, again, trust our guts. And if we're not feeling right, to just rule it out or get it ruled out as best as possible.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. Don't take any chances because... there's a lot of things gone around since COVID, since everybody's been, this was reintroduced back into the community, and a lot of infections seem to have got worse.
All right. I'm delighted to hear that you're back in good form and the family's happy and healthy. And as I say, Roisin, it's really useful to help us get that info across. I really appreciate your time and best wishes to everybody.
Brilliant. And thanks for taking the call, Greg. Thank you.
Bye-bye. So really, just to give that a little bit further context, the Health Protection Surveillance Centre warned of a surge in strep A cases. Cases of the variant of strep known as IGAS are 4 to 5 times higher than expected. So in some instances, obviously, as we heard, it could be deadly and can be deadly. And we heard Roisin's close shave with it there. 12 childhood and 18 adult deaths linked to IGAS here in the last 12 months. And between January and June of this year, 350 cases recorded across the country. And that compares to an average of around 78 cases before the pandemic. So certainly good advice. And thanks to Roisin there for sharing her story. We say good morning to Cathy Summers, CEO of the CX Company and author of Irish Customer Experience Report. Good morning to you, Cathy.
Good morning. Good to be here.
Thanks. Thank you so much for your time. So can you give us this, I think it's been in existence since 2015. So what is the background to this report, and how does one select which companies are surveyed, I suppose?
So we set up the report back in 2015, and the whole purpose really was to be able to benchmark companies in Ireland for the customer experience that they deliver. So we looked at things like the Times Top 1000 report, and you know, looked at all the different sectors that we wanted to cover to put the key companies in there. So we're at 150 companies this year. It varies slightly from year to year.
And is it across sort of media, health, other different types of companies?
Yeah, so we cover 11 different sectors. So we've got supermarket, retail, travel, financial, insurance, public sector, restaurants. So we cover the full range of any companies really that deal with customers.
And how do you gather the information, Cathy?
So there's a survey that goes out. It's done once a year. We partner with a research company called Amoruk, and we go out to 2,500 consumers and select a panel of people and ask them to give us feedback on companies that they've interacted with as a customer. And we ask them about 17 different questions, all based around their customer experience.
Now, the companies or the sort of, I suppose, the sector, the Irish Credit Union, there's a whole lot of them, and they're independent and under umbrella to some extent. They continue to top the poll in terms of customer satisfaction.
They do indeed. We just have them in as the credit union, so it's a sort of a catch-all for all of them. And they have been number one, started the survey back in 2015. So that's 9 years in a row. It's a fantastic achievement. And interestingly, this year, they've actually increased their score. And there's a bigger gap between them and the next best brand. So, you know, I think they've really been able to adapt the experience they deliver, and they've gone into the whole area of digital. So I think they're very well placed to be able to compete with the banks and offer more complex products like mortgages for customers.
How did supermarkets perform, I wonder? Because there's been an awful lot of conversation about profit gouging and what have you, increased costs and the cost of living. I'm just interested to see how that might be reflected in a report like this.
So the supermarkets, interestingly enough, are actually the top sector and have been for the last 4 years. So there is a large number of their brands in the top 20. And, you know, I think the prices definitely have gone up in our weekly shop. What the supermarkets have been really good at doing is that looking at how they deliver value to customers. And value is, you know, not just what we pay, but it's what we get, and the experience is a part of that. So being able to give instant value through their loyalty program, so the likes of Tesco club card prices, the Dunnes stores vouchers, all of those are aimed at offering value. And, you know, that it is a highly competitive sector. So where you're have got similar products and similar prices, it's the customer experience that really gives you the edge in terms of business performance.
And our perception too, I suppose, really, aren't you? That's what we're kind of going by as well. If it's perceived that they're looking after us, well, it's going to be reflected high. In fairness to, it is quite reflective of some of the controversies like the passport situation. We're not hearing as many complaints as we had in the past. So faith in that service seems to have increased a little bit. NCT, a lot of controversy around NCT, national car testing. They fell down the rankings, unavailability of test backlogs and long delays. And of course, the one that's gathering all the headlines is the basement club, to use football terms, and that's RTE. And it has seen quite a collapse in terms of the customer experience.
It has. So its customer experience score has gone down by 17%, which is the biggest drop we've seen in the last 3 years. But most importantly is that we measure customer experience on a number of factors, things like making it easy, how well each company understands the customer's needs. But the key one is trust. And RTE's trust score has dropped by 25%. And trust is so important. It's integral in every relationship we have. It's built up slowly over time through every interaction, but it's quite fragile and can be easily lost, which is obviously what has happened in RTE's case. And, you know, it can be very time consuming and very costly to build that trust back up again. So, you know, they've got a job ahead, which I think they're acknowledging that. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they build that back up, because it's not just the scandal, you know, and the Ryan Tubridy issue. You know, there were other comments came back from customers around things like poor programming, the number of repeats, the RTE player not being fit for purpose. So there's a number of issues that really need to be addressed from a customer perspective.
Yeah, since I sort of read the findings initially, I tried and I was thinking in my head how they could rehabilitate themselves. And it's a very difficult area because they're also in the business of disseminating news and covering politics and all that kind of stuff. It could be really, really difficult for them to bounce back from this. But they'll probably look at the viewership and listenership figures and take comfort in those. At this moment, do you survey independent media? And if you don't, will you? Because I think that would be interesting. The more people consume independent media than they do RTE, for an example. And there is a precedent there with the credit unions being under the one sort of category. Do you include independent media? And if not, why not?
We don't include independent media at the moment. We include the main sort of content providers, so the likes of Sky and Virgin. So they're obviously providing
but in Ireland, yes, but in Ireland, they aren't the main content providers. The main content providers in Ireland are
the radio.
Media.
Yes,
And News Talk and Virgin Media and all. It would just be really interesting, actually, to see a comparison. And it might actually buck up. You know, it might actually buck up media generally in this country if there were a sort of a public versus sort of private comparison there.
Yeah, and it's that every year we would review which brands and which sectors we put into the survey. For example, we added in logistics and delivery last year. Yeah. So, you know, we're looking at that and reviewing it, and definitely something to think about.
How did AIR get on? Are AIR in there separately, EIR?
They are indeed. Last year they were bottom of the table and they've actually moved off the bottom. They had the biggest increase in score of all the companies of 22%. So again, it's encouraging. They've had a real focus on customer experience. Yes, there are still a lot of challenges, but you know, it's one of those things that you've got to keep doing all the time. You've got to be improving and moving forward. And you know, I think they're a good example of that. So hopefully for their sake, that continues.
It's all very interesting, Cathy. We look forward to see what happens next year. Have a lovely day. Take care of yourself. Thanks for your time.
Okay, thanks very much.
Bye-bye. Have a lovely day. Cathy Summers there, CEO of the CX Company and author of Irish Customer Experience Report. It comes out as credit unions are rated the most trusted organisation in Ireland. And we have the wonderful Letterkenny Credit Union on board, great supporters of this programme as well, so that ties in nicely, albeit by a pleasant coincidence. And RTE, rock bottom of the pile. As I say, I would not like trying to rehabilitate RTE because of the area in which they work in. Right, okay, should we do some comments before the break? My father lost his arm at the age of 36. When he recovered, he worked every day of his life until he passed away at the age of 76, RIP. And indeed, the example I was trying to give is it's actually something that came up from a study I was watching in England, where someone was effectively told, well, you can use your other hand, even though it wasn't just a missing arm that was the issue, if you get where I'm coming from. Greg, when are the rules coming into force on e-scooters? They're everywhere and so dangerous. Two passed me on the footpath on Main Street in Buncrana. No bell to let me know they were at your heels and no helmets. Scary things. November, I think. Oh, no, I think that's actually... I'm confusing it with the quads. I'm not sure there's actual timeline at this point. I thought an increase for those unable to work was a good idea. I know some people with a disability who work, they could not work full time, so the 220 is a great help. But even those who have not found work are far better off than those whose disability removes any chance of work. Hi, Greg. How did a proposal to increase disability payments for some categories become a decrease? Currently 220, proposed minimum 220, mid-range 240, worst level 260. This is not the UK system, but we're starting with a new system. I didn't call it a deduction. I did compare it a reduction from the top rate downwards, but I wasn't comparing it to the current price, the current payment structures. But I appreciate you offering some balance there. Fantastic work by the Gardaí, Navy and the Army Rangers. We don't praise them often enough for the dangerous job that they do. And on it goes. Okay, we are going to be talking about... we're going to be speaking to a volunteer support officer with Alone. They're looking to recruit. They're having a number of open days as well. All that's coming up. But first, let us take a quick break. Now, you're very welcome back to the programme. Helena Madden is a volunteer support officer with Alone. Good morning to you, Helena. Sorry, I haven't even got your fader. Good morning to you, Helena.
Morning, Greg.
Great to have you on the show. Talk to us about Alone. Just to remind people, I think people will be familiar with the work, but always good to start off with a brief outline of what you do.
Absolutely, and a lot of people are coming up to me lately saying, oh, I didn't realise Alone was in Donegal. So Alone is a charity or an organisation that works primarily to help older people remain living in their own homes for as long and safely as they possibly can. So we provide integrated systems of support coordination to link older people in with the services and will allow them to remain staying at home in their own communities where they've always lived for their entire lives to stay connected to that community.
So if an older person engages with Alone, what kind of interaction do they have with your group? Like, how do you support them or empower them, I suppose, to stay in their own homes?
Yeah, so we have a load of different, I suppose, areas that we can help them with. So we do, I suppose, there is supports around befriending. So a lot of older people come to us and say they're lonely or they're feeling isolated and they're not getting out a lot. So we can provide them with our program. We do visitation support and befriending, in which we place a volunteer with an older person for 1 hour per week. And that volunteer calls into the older person to have a cup of tea and a chat. And that's it, just a bit of friendship. It doesn't have to be set days and set times. It can be different days and different times weekly, depending on the volunteer schedule. We have a telephone befriending service as well for older people that might be a bit more shy and that might want somebody to call to their home. We have volunteers that work on our telephone lines, and older people sign up for the service. They can have one call up to five calls per week, Monday to Friday. They specify the time and the day that they want the call. And we have volunteers that phone up to see how they're doing. We call them friendly calls. They call up and they say, hello, how are you doing today? Mm. And the conversation goes from there.
I mean, there's a load of reasons as to why someone might end up being isolated. Maybe their partner passed away. maybe they're not as mobile as they were. Maybe the local post office closed, or maybe they used to go out for a pint or something and they no longer do. Maybe they've withdrawn a little into themselves since COVID, because I think there's an awful lot of that as well, and still nervous to step out. And I wish we could do more to try and encourage people to do that. But as I say, those are just some of the many examples as to why people from one end of the week to the other might not have contact. And that has a horrible impact on people, that absolute isolation.
It does. It has a huge effect. And studies have shown that it increases cognitive decline, dementia, Alzheimer's, blood pressure, heart disease in older people that are being isolated and feeling lonely. So I suppose we're in there then to make them not feel like that anymore with a service that we offer for them, whether it be through getting them a befriender or a telephone call, or whether it be linking them in with the care teams or the social prescribers locally to get them a plan where they're able to get out and about and join society and become part of society again. Like you said, a lot of older people over COVID sat in because that was the advice, and they followed the advice to the letter, and everybody was so good. And it's not even that they're scared to come out anymore. They've just gotten to such a habit of sitting in that they kind of have forgot what it's like to get out and about. And we find when we place the volunteers in, or we place them with a social prescriber, or the support coordinator goes in and helps them with whatever it is that they need to help with, whether it be accessing healthcare, occupational therapy, or getting supports in if they need walking aids or that it gives them a new lease of life. And then they're able to get up and become part of society and get out, and they get the confidence back to get out and do it.
Yeah, indeed. So we've talked about the benefit of the service users, or whatever way you might describe them, the older people that you work with. And we're going to be talking about recruitment in a moment. So I just want sort of maybe the anecdotal experience you have, or the feedback you get from your volunteers. What do they get from it? What does it mean to them?
We have the best volunteers in Donegal at MCHO1. They just get so much back from it. They say not only do they get the joy in knowing that they're helping somebody to not be lonely, but the wisdom then that they get from the people that they're visiting, and the stories and just the history in itself that the people that bring to them, you know, the pure enjoyment that becomes friendships in a lot of cases. Like, we have volunteers. Alone just started, I suppose, in Donegal about 2 years ago. Before that, it was smaller groups that all came into the one band of Alone. And it was the Good Morning service before that. And we have volunteers that have been with us for 10 years or more. Like, I was chatting to one lady yesterday, and she's been volunteering with us since 2017, visiting the same older person since then. Do you know, so it really becomes a friendship, you know, between the older person.
Do you support people in that? You know, this isn't a counselling service, but it's a listening ear. And I suppose maybe there are, you know, little flags that maybe you want to keep an eye out for during conversation or what have you. Do you trust people's sort of own intuition, or is there some guidance given there too, Helena?
Yeah, no, 100%. So all the volunteers that come into us, they get an interview. So they come in, they get a short video about what Alone does. It's about 20 minutes. They get interviewed by me. Then they get a training session, whether it be by Zoom or in person. And we support them. We do all, it's about a 2 hour long training session. And we support them through that. And the volunteers know that there are eyes and ears, they're Alone's representatives on the ground to those older people they're visiting, that if they know little changes, or maybe they think that, God, you know what, this is different than it was last month, or I think this person could use this or could use that, they can contact us and we link them in with the older person again. So we very, very much rely on our volunteers to be our eyes and ears on the ground, because they'll be seeing the older people that they're matched with as regular as anybody else that the people is connected to.
Yeah, and of course, that's motivation in and of itself to have a positive impact on someone's life. But look, at the same time, too, we are a country with 100% unemployment effectively. And, you know, this is a lovely thing to have on your CV if you're looking to explore job opportunities or move around. A lot of employers like volunteer work, and it's a great sign of someone's character. And as I say, that would never be someone's motivation, but hey, if it's a nice bonus along with it too, all well and good. As I say, volunteering is always looked on really favourably. So what kind of and I think it varies, there's the phone interactions and then there is the sort of visiting. What kind of a commitment, before we talk about where people can get more information face-to-face, what kind of commitment normally or do people sort of really, do you want from people effectively?
Yeah, so it's actually really easy, and I think it's a lot less than what people think. So the telephone service, we look for a 2-hour commitment per week, and it's a ROTA schedule. So to make the calls to the older people, and they might, they're not going to be on the phone for a solid 2 hours, you know, like they'll get, there'll be so many calls that come up that they make. And that's 6 months for 2 hours per week. And then the visitation befriending is just 1 hour on one day per week that suits you to call out to an older person. And we look for a commitment of a year with that. But within those roles, it's very, very flexible. Like we realize, I realize people's volunteers, they have lots going on, their work, and they have kids, they have groups they're involved with, you know, they go on holidays, you know, and that's fine. Mm. And I think the bottom line is that that's fine if you're busy. We can still make it work for you. You know, it's just, it's the 1 hour, and we're very flexible in our approach towards that.
And most people are really, really caring and giving, but not everyone necessarily has the resources to donate for to charity or the time to fully commit to something or other. This allows people that want to have a genuine, really, really important positive impact on another person's life, particularly as the age. It's an amazing thing to be part of. You know what I mean?
Like, it is, yeah.
And as I say, it doesn't really cost the person anything other than a little bit of their time in the week. But how rewarding it must be to know that you're having this impact on another human's life.
It is. And a lot of the older people that are in Donegal that are waiting for volunteers is waiting 6 months to a year. And if you're somebody who doesn't see a lot of people from 1 week to the next, a year is a huge amount of time. And a lot of the people that are in our service are very, they're the older of the older people. So they're the 70s and 80s pluses. So, I mean, those people wait and sit in a year on their own lonely. You know, it's not fair. And if, and all it takes is maybe somebody in your community has an hour per week for you to call it and have that cup of tea and a chat. Completely transform that person's life that you're calling into.
Do you have an idea of how many older people are waiting on?
I have an exact idea. So across Donegal, we have 183 older people currently waiting for a visit. So there's 61 in the Finn Valley area, 37 in Inishowen, 33 in North Central Donegal. So that's from Letterkenny, Outremelton, Milford, Fannad, Creasla, Dunfanaghy direction. 31 in South Donegal and 21 in the Glenties, Ardra and Ross.
So these are older people that have engaged with the service and said, I'd love to have a befriending service, and they're waiting.
And they're waiting and they're deemed necessary of the service. Oh. So I suppose we make sure that the people that they're getting befrienders really need that support, that they're just not thrown into, I suppose, somebody that has heaps of support and lots going on, that these people, these 183 people, are in need of somebody to visit them for that hour per week.
Right. All right. OK. So there's a couple of open days, volunteer recruitment days, you could call them, in early October, which we're in right now. On Friday, the Central Library, Letterkenny, between 10:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. That's drop-in. Now, you're not expecting people to come in at 10:30 and leave at 5:30. You're open.
No, it's drop-in. All the open days that we're doing is drop-in open days for people to get information, whether it be about them wanting to volunteer with us or get more information about that, or even about the services. There'll be support coordinators in on the day as well about the services that alone has to offer.
All right, Central Library, Letterkenny, this Friday, 10:30 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. Drop-in any time between those hours. Saturday the 7th of October in the Finn Valley Centre in Ballybuffet from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. in case that suits you better. Just give me that number again. 137, did you say?
183 older people.
I beg your pardon. 183 older people have been have engaged with a loan, have been assessed that they are needing of a befriending stroke telephone support service. So a lot of volunteers. Well, it's not a lot considering there's 163,000 of us in this county, but it should be doable. I hope you have a huge... Well, I hope if anyone's actually listening now, can they... And you know, they may be listening in Killybegs, for an example, or Dunloe or Mallon, and they would like to, but they can't get along to Letterkenny or Ballybuffet. Can they speak to you outside of these open days?
They can indeed. They can get me from Monday to Friday from 9 to 5. I have an email address they can get me on, helena.madden@alone.ie. And Greg, you have my phone number details.
No,
I can leave those with you as well. Okay. Or they can go onto our Alone's website, www.alone.ie. And there's a wee box that they can tick for volunteering. It asks them to put in their details. So they're their address and their telephone number and their email address, and then they'll come through to me and I will get them started or give them whatever information they need to make their decision to get started with us.
Okay, I hope you get a wee run on it now after this.
It would be great. It would be so great for them, people waiting, you know, that you could tell them just the joy when you tell somebody who's been waiting 6 months or a year that we found them somebody that's going to visit them. The joy that it brings them, like, and the look on their face. And I always say to the volunteers in the training sessions, the look when they meet that older person for the first time is just what makes the whole thing work and why we do what we do. Just to get that end result, to see that older person happy and content, feeling safe and that they're connected to the community.
And let's have a cup of tea and a chat.
A bit of fun, a bit of a laugh.
It's not caring or anything like that, just no. So people are clear. I just want to make sure. Yeah. So I really hope you get a wee run after the back of this conversation. Thanks. Your enthusiasm and your love of what you do, Helena, is infectious, and hopefully it's come across the same way it has to me, to others. And those almost not far off 200 older people who are waiting for a friend, effectively, get it. Okay, thanks so much. Yeah. It's been super. Lovely speaking to you. It really has.
Thanks a million,
Greg. Very much indeed. Okay, there you are. Let us know if you're going to get in contact with them or attend the open days. 086 60 25,000. Very inspiring, Helena, there. Paul Dunleavy joins us on the show now. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing good. It's good to have you on the programme. And it's an interesting one. I haven't done something like this before. You've an idea for a show. It's called Chasing the Deal, and you're looking for a documentary maker, a producer, a TV crew who will turn this idea into a reality. You also have already got a pilot of it, which viewers to the programme can sort of watch as we talk. So talk to me about the concept of Chasing the Deal.
Okay, Greg. Well, basically, I suppose this really all stemmed up from, we were living in Derry and we had a house that was sort of a Georgian-styled house, and we were looking to redecorate it and we wanted furniture for it. But this was the kind of furniture that we couldn't buy in any shop in Europe, or we couldn't get anywhere. So Josephine, my long-suffering other half, I suppose, Josephine was very good on the computer. So she was always scouring for sort of auction sites and car boot sales and places like that that might be able to sort of supply us with the type of stuff that we wanted. So we basically started traveling around all of Ireland, from Cavan to Dublin to Newry, everywhere. And we bought period style furniture, not necessarily antiques, maybe French Renaissance, Chesterfield buttoned leather suites, hand carved furniture, stuff like that, but stuff that really worked well in the house. And I mean, when we finished furnishing it, we stood back and we said, wow, that's incredible. And we were buying suites of furniture that time that probably would have cost maybe 4,000 or 5,000 euro new. We were buying them maybe for 400 or 500. So the effect was incredible. We had saved a fortune of money. But more important than that, we really enjoyed what we'd done. So after we had done that, Greg, we were sitting in the house at the weekend thinking, you know, what are we going to do now? We have no fun anymore. So we kept going to these places. We kept doing what we'd done. Now we were filling the house, because now we were almost in the hoarding arena. So you couldn't get into our house then without actually walking sideways and past the front hall. Like, we had statues of Mike Tyson. We had electric guitars everywhere. That was just a mess. So we were left then, Greg, with only one option. That was to sell the stuff that we didn't need, which we started doing. And we found out that because we liked it, other people also liked it.
Yeah.
So therein lies the whole concept of what we were doing.
Can I say, from what I've seen so far, and this is a compliment, not an insult, it seems to be very similar, is it, to the Salvage, not similar, but a concept to the Salvage Hunters TV show in Britain, is it, where you acquire, you know, some beautiful stuff. And we need a version of that show ourselves with Irish characters, people from here. It seems like a no-brainer. It seems handy to make too, and that's easy for me to say, says you. But do you know what I mean? You're ready to go. You've got a team. Yeah. You've got a concept.
Greg, we have it sitting on a plate for somebody to take us on. Normally, when a TV producer would want a show like that, they've got to go and look for people like us, go and look for people that can restore the furniture, go and look for all this infrastructure. We have it. We've got the team. We're raring to go. So basically all someone has to do is say, like, let's go. Maybe if they want to make a few changes or a few different sort of cash changes or whatever, that's okay. But just that particular show that you're talking about, let me give you an example. That particular show was in Belfast recently and called into two separate shops in Belfast that sells antiques. After they shot the show, when they had left and went back, the turnover of those two shops increased 40% because of the exposure that they got on the TV show. So this show has the potential, I think, to put Donegal on the map, to show, I suggest, the country and the world what we can do in Donegal.
All right,
somebody else can do it.
Can I play a little clip here? I think you're negotiating with a man in Bonkrana, is it? Let's just have a listen here.
All right.
Well, we came down here today not really knowing what to expect. And we come around the corner and I saw these two teacups.
Very nice, John.
Aye, all right.
Very unusual, my man.
Very unusual, aye.
As soon as I saw them, I thought, wow, these are very different. Of course, I couldn't show my enthusiasm because then I would have given the game away a little bit. Go on, John. How much are they, John, for the pair?
For the pair, I wouldn't separate them now. For the pair, we're chatting about 300 euros.
They're
too dear for me, man. They're reasonable, that. They're not too bad.
No, they're too dear for me. For me to have a go.
Yeah, and sort of people start getting the experience. And as I say, we'll play the footage out. So these are two really unique sort of teacups, and you're bidding with the person that owns them. You have to sort of make sure there's a bit of margin in there for you. You have to see what you need to do to them, who you might sell them on to. So he gets a few quid, gets them out of his backyard. And then obviously you can try and find out where to market those or who gets them. And we follow you through that journey. As I say, it's not a brand new concept, but it's just lovely to see it well produced and with an Irish feel to it, you know?
Well, yes, there is that, Greg. But also a lot of the shows out there don't show, the shows that you're mentioning and a lot of shows like this don't show from sort of conception to, you know, from conception to birth.
Yes.
We show the actual buying of it, the restoration of it. And finally, the most important part is selling it.
It is.
Where you have somebody tangible coming down.
Well, that's the critical thing for me in these shows. I need to know not what the estimated value is what it's sold for. Because I want to know, you got those cups off him for 200 quid. I don't know how much you're going to have to spend doing them up. But I want to know, did you break even? Did you make a loss? Or did you make 600 quid? Do you know what I mean? That's the critical part of the programme that I need. I need to know what happens if you get it sold.
Correct. And we were emphatic about that because the other shows, and most of them don't show that because it takes more time and more effort and everything else. We want to really basically show that, yes, sometimes, Greg, now mind you, we miscue and we get it wrong. But more times than we will get it right.
Yeah.
And again, we have like Jerry Brett, who's in Bridge End, and his company called Save Our Sofas. They're fantastic. It's a family-run business. We've taken sofas to him in bits, Greg. I mean, and if you'd seen them, you'd say, go to the skip. A week later, we go back. Jerry has it all done. There's a masterpiece sitting in front of us.
Okay.
And that's the magic.
As I say, you've done all the hard work. You have it all done there. And people love this kind of stuff. How's discussions going with the likes of RTE, maybe TJ Cahir? They seem to actually... See, the thing is, Paul, we were talking a little earlier on about RTE. They're bottom of the list in terms of customer satisfaction. Some of the complaints were repeats and what have you. Then what happens with RTE, and I'm not dragging you into this conversation, but they then throw money at some minor celebrity to go out foreign and do something or whatever it is, look at someone's teeth or whatever. We don't make enough proper homegrown shows like this. And they don't commission enough of them. I don't know why they don't, but they can actually sell a show like this to Discovery or to one of the streaming platforms as well. They really need to look at what they commission and how they commission it, because I would have argued that this is a no-brainer rather than sending someone who used to be in a boy band to Turkey.
Correct. But, you know, we were in discussions with an Irish broadcaster. I can't name the broadcaster. And they have us shortlisted. But they have a shortlist listed now for quite a while, and apparently it's very hard to get shortlisted. It's just getting them to pass the line that's the problem, Greg. I feel I'm standing sometimes in front of a door and I have no key to open it. And if someone gives me the key, we'll open it and we will show them, and we will put Donegal on the map. We'll show them what these local people can do, and we will make it entertaining and fun. And there's an appetite for this because it's all to do with the circular economy where nothing's thrown out, stuff's reused. If you look at even Letterkenny, there's some fantastic charity shops there. So somebody can go
buy something in the charity shop, take it home, ticky it up, paint it up, or clean it, or do whatever, and sell it. And you're actually helping your local charity,
yeah.
But you're also helping yourself.
Right, I'm not being parochial here. As I say, I think it's actually a great idea, and this is the type of programming that maybe could start rehabilitating RTE, or even maybe one of the independent broadcasters or what have you. As I say, you've done all the hard work. You've got a pilot together, and as I say, we watch an awful lot of this stuff on UK satellite channels. Why don't we have a homegrown version of it? I hope it gets in front of the right set of eyes that can see the potential here, because I do wonder sometimes who actually commissions these shows and if they're blinded by celebrity or something, Paul. But anyway, the best of luck.
It's a tricky one, Greg. It's getting in front of the person. Sometimes you can't, I mean, to get, one time years ago, you'd pick up the phone, you'd ring somebody, that day's gone. Now you have to send emails, they may or may not answer. If we can get in front of somebody, give me 5 minutes in front of somebody, and if I don't sell it, I'm no good.
Yeah,
I'll do
it
if I get in front of someone.
I get you. All right.
We can also do an Irish version, because Tagalog agam. So that option's also there.
Yeah, you've got it all. Okay, brilliant stuff.
Listen, Greg, thank you very much for giving us this opportunity. Listen, we really appreciate the help.
You talk about how quickly you can sell it. There's a bit of restoration in there. There's bargaining there. There's characters in there. There's banter in there. You know, it has all the ingredients. You just need someone to see the potential in it. And I'm not just saying that, because I have watched the pilot, and I would watch the show. And I mean that from the bottom of my heart. Not just because
it's
a Donegal show, but genuinely I would. We need to be supporting.
That means a lot to us. Yeah.
Have a lovely day, Paul. Best wishes to everyone. All right, take care.
Thank you very much, Greg.
All right, bye-bye.
Okay.
Right, you can check out that. We'll link it on our Facebook and our other social media at some point. Okay, that's where we have to leave it. I want to thank Niamh Shields, who departs the show today. It's been lovely working with Niamh, a lovely person, and we will miss her, although we'll probably paths will cross again into the future. The old reliables, though, we'll never go on you. We're always going to be here. Caroline Orr, Greg Hughes. Here, 9 till 12 every day. We're back with you tomorrow. Have a lovely one. Stay tuned. John Bredesen's coming up next around the Northwest.